Hi, my name is Lindsay Hoffman. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at Rutgers University in the plant breeding program. Today I'm going to be presenting on a project that's part of my research work. And like Eric, I am funded through the Northeast Woody Biomass Initiative grant as well. And so one of the objectives that we're working on at Rutgers for this grant is improving switchgrass as a feedstock for biofuel production. And so as many of you know that switchgrass is a warm season perennial bunch type grass that's native to most of North America. Within the species, there exist two different ecotypes, upland and lowland. They differ both phenotypically, as you can see illustrated here in this picture comparing upland and lowland, and they also differ at the genotype level. Now, when breeding for improved cultivars, the main trait that we're selecting for is biomass yield. And over the past several years, targeted breeding has resulted in the development and release of cultivars, both upland and lowland, that exhibit improved biomass yield compared to other cultivars. There are many other traits that we select for, one particular being biomass composition. So the relative levels of lignin to hemicellulose and cellulose, which can significantly impact the production of cellulosic ethanol from the overall biomass. Now, in conjunction with the research that we're doing with breeding and improving cultivars, there's also been research that has identified a number of different factors that can negatively impact the production of switchgrass in the United States for biofuel production. One of those factors that has been identified is anthracnose, which was originally thought to be caused by Colitotrichum graminicola, but in 2009, Crouch et al. At Rutgers University isolated and identified this new species that's unique to switchgrass and causing anthracnose. It was later named Navitas, where Navitas means energy in Latin. So anthracnose becomes more prevalent as temperatures increase along with humidity. So we start seeing symptoms of anthracnose on leaf tissue starting in June and really ramping up in the month of July and August. What we start to see are these chlorotic lesions on the leaf tissue here. And you can see that those lesions can sometimes coalesce. And in severe outbreaks, that can occupy the entire leaf blade or even transfer over to the stem tissue and infect that as well. And so although we don't know a whole lot about anthracnose in switchgrass, other research in warm season bioenergy crops such as sorghum suggests that anthracnose can reduce overall biomass yield at the end of the season, and it can cause changes in the biomass composition of the leaf and stem tissue. So with that being said, there was really a need for research to identify whether anthracnose is going to affect the quantity and the quality of biomass of switchgrass that is trying to be produced for cellulosic ethanol. We developed three specific objectives in order to target this research area that was concerning us. And so the first of which was, one, to first determine whether anthracnose actually would cause reductions in yields on a yearly basis. The second objective that we wanted to look at is whether there was cultivar susceptibility or differences in susceptibility or resistance among the cultivars that are typically grown for biofuel production. And lastly, we wanted to look at whether the quality of biomass could be affected by infection of anthracnose. So this research was conducted at our research station in Freehold, New Jersey. The plots were established from seed, and they were 5.5 by 1.8 meters. They were established in 2013 with 16 cultivars and populations of switchgrass, which consisted of 9 upland ecotypes. It included these 3 populations, which were obtained from Cornell, so we have a partnership with Cornell as part of this project, as well as this Carthage C2, which was developed at Rutgers. We also were evaluating the response of 7 lowland ecotypes that included this timber C2, which was also produced at Rutgers University. So we were relying solely on natural epidemics of anthracnose to cause infection. This was not an inoculated study. But in order to control the anthracnose in part of the plots, we needed to treat with fungicides. So what we did was applied fungicides to half of the treatment area to control anthracnose and left the other half untreated. So this is a picture of our research area in Freehold, New Jersey. And you can see that this is the entire 5.5 meter plot. And we've divided this in half, and we sprayed half of this with fungicide and again left the other half untreated. In 2014, we made 3 applications of the fungicides Daconil combined with Aliette. Based on the research that, or the data that we analyzed from 2014, we wanted to tweak how we were conducting the experiment. So we continued our applications through the months of July and August. So we had a total of 8 applications of fungicides. And we also included heritage in the rotation in order to prevent against any possible resistance issues that may be coming up due to using the same fungicides. Throughout the growing season, we were monitoring anthracnose severity. Specifically, we were rating anthracnose visually on a 1 to 10 basis, where 1 equals 100% anthracnose infection and 10 is no anthracnose at all. The ratings were conducted once per month during the months of June, July, August, and September in both 2014 and 2015. At the end of the growing season in both years, we harvested biomass of a known swath using a sickle bar mower, and then we utilized that plant material in order to estimate overall biomass yield on a megagrams per hectare basis. That dried plant material was then ground and used for biomass composition analysis using near-infrared reflectance spectroscopy. The study was arranged as a split plot design with cultivar as the main plot and then the fungicide treatment as a subplot. All the data was subjected to analysis of variance, and then the means were separated using Fisher's protected least significant difference test. We also ran a correlation analysis to see if there was any relationship between anthracnose severity and biomass yield, as well as anthracnose severity and biomass composition. So now we're going to be moving into the results here. So in both 2014 and 2015, we had anthracnose infection. So we were able to get natural epidemics. We did not have to inoculate. And this is just a picture of some of the leaf tissue and what it looks like on some of the plants. So this table here is illustrating the ANOVA based on visual ratings. You have your sources of cultivar, treatment, and the interaction between those two. And then you're looking at the rating dates in 2014 and 2015. So what I'd like to point out is that cultivar and treatment, both of the main effects, were significant in influencing overall anthracnose severity. But only on two dates in 2014 did we see that there was a significant interaction between those two factors. So based on this, I'm just going to be presenting the data on the main effects of cultivar and treatment. So again, here we're looking at the fungicide effects on anthracnose severity, specifically looking at the effect of treatment. Again, we have the ratings from 2014 and 2015 using that visual rating on a 1 to 10 basis. You have your plus fungicide treatment here as well as your untreated or minus fungicide treatment. And what you notice and what we typically expected is that overall fungicide controlled anthracnose, and visually we were able to detect this on every single rating date on both years. So again, this is something that we expected based on the fungicides we were using in the applications that we were made. So the other interesting piece of this is that we did see variability among the cultivars that we were evaluating. So I'm just going to set up this graph because most of the graphs are going to look like this in the next few slides. So on the y-axis, you have that rating from 1 to 10. On the x-axis, you have the cultivar or population that was evaluated. Specifically, within the graph, you have lowland, which is blue, and then you have uplands, which are in yellow bars. And right now, what we're looking at is that final rating date. So I'm only presenting the final rating date because when we want to look at overall biomass yield that's harvested in October, really it's this last rating date that's most important if we're trying to correlate the two. So first of all, what you'll notice is that by the end of the growing season, overall, every plant had at least some anthracnose. So there were no plants that were 100% anthracnose free. But what you'll also notice is that there is significant variability with regards to the amount of anthracnose that is on each of the cultivars. And I'd just like to point out a couple of these too. So specifically, if you take a look at this Forestburg, this was the most susceptible to anthracnose in comparison to all of the other cultivars that we evaluated, specifically in comparison to cultivars such as Carthage, which you can see here, and Colony. And so these will be important. I'll bring these specific cultivars up in the next couple of slides. Overall, too, there wasn't a real significant ecotype effect, so we were seeing that it was variable just based on which cultivar we were evaluating. So similarly, the same setup, except now we're looking at that final rating date in 2015. We did see that there was a greater amount of anthracnose in 2015. Conditions were hotter and more humid in New Jersey in that year, so that may be attributing to that. And again, overall, all of the plant material had at least some anthracnose by the end of the growing season. And the trends are similar with the cultivars with regards to amount on the plant tissue. So you have, again, Forestburg here, had the most severe, indicated by the lowest number, infection of anthracnose in comparison to all the other cultivars, including Carthage as well as Colony. So again, what this really says to us, because we're looking at overall cultivar performance, is that there are differences that we can select for in the future with regards to anthracnose on a visual basis. So now we're going to look at overall biomass yield. Oh, sorry, I forgot about this picture, but I just wanted to illustrate to you that we could actually see this visually in the field. It was very predominant throughout the growing season, where you had Carthage that had a lot of green tissue left. This was on the last rating date, in comparison to Forestburg, where a lot of the leaf tissue has already senesced by this point. So now moving on to the fungicide effects on biomass yield. So the only factor that was significant was cultivar in affecting biomass yield. But I wanted to put this up just to show to you that there were no differences between the two treatments in each year. But we did see a significant increase in biomass yield in 2015, which may be attributed to the fact that we made more fungicide applications, as well as we included that additional fungicide of heritage. But if we look at the cultivar response with regards to biomass yield, again, having the same graph set up, but now on the y-axis we have megagrams per hectare dry weight, and again looking at lowlands versus uplands in biomass yield in 2014. You can see that there was significant variability among the cultivars, and what I'd like to point out too, again, if we look at this Forestburg, which had the most anthracnose, you see that it has the lowest biomass yield in comparison to a lot of the other cultivars evaluated, such as Carthage and Colony. This trend was similar in 2015, although we saw an increase in overall biomass yield. The performance of the cultivars was similar with regards to, for example, Forestburg down here and Carthage as well as Colony, among the other cultivars too, that we saw similar performance from one year to the next with regards to overall biomass yield. So the last piece of data that I'm presenting here is the compositional analysis. So I only have the 2014 data yet. I'm still working on the 2015 data. I know this is a cumbersome table here, but the most important thing to look at here is the cultivars here listed on your left. We have the ecotype designation. But the percentage or the ratio of hemicellulose, cellulose, and lignin were not significantly impacted by fungicide treatment. Nor was there a correlation between anthracnose severity or lignocellulosic composition. So from this standpoint, it seems or it appears that anthracnose does not have a significant effect on the overall biomass composition in the cultivars that we are currently evaluating. So just to summarize and make some conclusions here, overall what we saw was that fungicides significantly reduced anthracnose severity based on those visual ratings that we did on the monthly, every single month, but it did not have a significant effect on overall biomass yield or those biomass composition characteristics. We did see that anthracnose infection varied by cultivar and was correlated to overall biomass yield. So again, specifically, we saw that certain cultivars such as Forestburg had higher amounts of anthracnose and had lower overall biomass yields. So going forward, what this means, it's a positive for, let's say, producers or growers that are trying to grow switchgrass for biofuel production, because it means that fungicide applications are really not necessary for long-term control of this disease. But going forward from a breeding standpoint, we can really target and select for plants that have lower anthracnose and an overall inherent resistance to the pathogen and potentially result in an increased biomass yield in the long run. So with that, I'd like to thank those who assisted me with harvesting and taking the measurements at Rutgers University, as well as our funding source again from NewBio and the Rutgers New Jersey Agricultural Experiment Station. And then I think there's probably time because I talk really fast. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. So the question was, is there any other foliar disease that affects switchgrass? Yes, there is. So there has been research done looking at the impacts of rust on switchgrass, as well as smut is another pathogen that affects switchgrass. So I know that there has been some research done with that with regards to fungicide and controlling and looking at overall biomass yield.
So you didn't see any in your trials?
We In our trial, so we also have another nursery, a couple of nurseries at the farm that we're evaluating with switchgrass, and I haven't, over the past couple of years, seen any rust or smut. So the primary pathogen or disease that we're working with is anthracnose.
Do you know if the low-yielding cultivar is normally low-yielding even without anthracnose present?
The question was, do I know if the overall low-yielding cultivar, which was Forestburg, is generally low-yielding? And yes, I think that it's an artifact of the research, but I think, yes, what we're seeing is that, one, it may potentially be to its native region of adaptation, where Forestburg is from South Dakota, and the Carthage was from Cape May in New Jersey, so it may have something to do with that, but I think inherently, yes, Forestburg has overall lower biomass yield in comparison to some of these cultivars. Thank you.